is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Star fam, welcome back to Stargirl After Show, sponsored as always by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week we are talking about The Last Will and Testament of Sylvester Pemberton, which, I mean, it's just the most intense episode we've had on this series so far, I think.
Absolutely. I watched it and I just alternated between sobbing and being like, wait, what's going on? And then crying again. And then, wait, that just happened?
It's also worth noting that like Yvette before her, Sarah is losing her voice. So bear with it. We like a raspy voice here on the after show, though.
Hopefully I can make it through the episode.
So this episode was written by the writing team of Turi Meyer and Alfredo Septian and directed by Jennifer Pong, just like the last episode, because that's how this works.
We jump in with a flashback to decades ago, and it is Dolores Winters winning an Oscar for her movie Remembering to Forget.
I'm glad that you called it an Oscar, despite the statue clearly not being an Oscar. That is what it's meant to be, but for anyone that doesn't know, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences is very, very protective of their trademarks and will not let an actual Oscar or a facsimile thereof be used in anything, especially not to murder someone.
Yeah, I can imagine they would frown on upon that a bit.
I want to point out that I don't know the actress's name. I'm sorry, but Dolores Winters is the wife of the mayor from a show that I love, Resident Alien, and it was exciting to see her.
She did a great job in the scene. Like, she didn't have a lot of scenes in this whole show, but yeah, I loved what I saw of her.
Yeah, and she did a great job foreshadowing her next body as well, which mm-hmm. we'll get into.
Yeah, after she wins her award, she's back at her house and a man comes in, professes his love to her, and
This is famed movie actor King Standish.
Is that a...
No.
An actual actor? Okay. He says that he sees her as an actor always acting and he wants to get to know the real her. He won't judge her. Show me who you truly are.
Yeah, he's a little too insightful for the ultra humanite.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is murdered in cold blood with an Oscar statue and air quotes Oscar statue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I also want to point out throughout the season, we've been seeing this Carver Coleman movie poster and marquee at the Downtown Dallas Theater, Lovers Die at Dusk.
Uh-huh.
Carver Coleman is an actor from the DC Comics created by Jeff, who in Doomsday Clock is murdered with an Oscar statue.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So King Standish is sort of standing in for Carver Coleman in this instance. Why it wasn't just Carver Coleman, I don't know. But, you know, perhaps that's a question we can ask Jeff.
Okay.
So after she's standing over his body, I noticed like she's like, like she sounded like a gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
Yeah.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah, I thought that was perfect. And I was very excited to get Dr. Ito back there, not because of the character, but because I love that actor.
Yeah, Nelson Lee got to be Dragon King pre-Dragon Scales, which mm-hmm. we saw previously in just a photo of him that Cindy had.
Yeah.
And in the Goggle Files. But this is the first time we get to see him like actually move around on screen without being completely covered in lizard scales.
Yeah, although that process was starting, he shows that, you know, because he sees the running with the JSA inevitable, he started taking precautions.
Yeah.
And shows his arm. just like how Cindy's arm was starting to change. Ultra Humanite is very impressed by the dragon scales and those improvements, but has her own idea for what they want to do with a different body. And we see the picture of the albino gorilla.
Yes, in Greatest Adventure Magazine, it should be pointed out, which is a magazine that in season two, Bruce Gordon had been on the cover of.
Oh, that's right.
So bringing it back.
And then we come back to present time in Pat's and Courtney's room talking with her. And she is not okay with Sylvester taking on Icicle by himself. He doesn't see why he wants to do it. Pat's like, well, he sees us as his fight. And then Barbara coming in saying, no, it's all of our fight.
But she's also, before that, feeling very empathetic about Artemis and the situation she's in, being a whole ass orphan now.
Yeah. They go down to the basement and see a Starman suit on the bed, but no Sylvester. He just left a note that he had some things to do. And we find out what he had to do because we go over to Rip City where Artemis is suited up and Sylvester pops in saying he's checking in on her. She's saying she's going to kill Jordan. And he's like, no, if you want to honor your parents, you are going to go to college. And you need to be the star that they raised you to be.
And, you know, assuring her that, don't worry, I'm going to kill this guy for you.
Yeah.
Which, you know, at this point, we've all seen the episode.
Warning. Spoilers ahead for this week's episode.
So it's worth noting that obviously he's just maybe trying to protect Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, talking about this episode afterwards is a very, very different experience than when you watch it.
Really is.
Because watching it's a real roller coaster. Like, you just don't know what's going on.
No.
Let's jump ahead a little bit and just talk about the episode overall a bit. Because we're given to believe that Starman is like a terrible person. He like decimates Pat emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Takes the staff. Destroys Stripe, and then Zeke makes us think for a minute, and Pat, maybe he's like, he'd rather have us hate him than have us get hurt.
Well, and that's what I was thinking the whole time, because when we talked about when the JSA went to kill Bruce Gordon, and I think there was a flashback to Pat and Sylvester in the car.
Yeah.
And he was just being a jerk to him there, and he was doing that to keep Pat away from it. So I thought that was exactly what was happening again. And I was like, oh, this is really tying in nicely to what has happened before.
And, you know, they made us all believe that. They made Pat believe that for like a minute. And then there's the reveal that, I mean, I don't know why I'm like tiptoeing around it. We all know what the reveal is.
Mm-hmm.
That Sylvester is, in fact, the Ultra Humanite. So it's just like so many ups and downs. And as we go through the episode step by step, I definitely want to touch base with you and like see what your reactions were to that.
Okay.
So let's move on with we just left off with Artemis being told that Sylvester will do the murder for her.
And then we check in with Rick. We haven't seen him for a few episodes.
He's testing out. Taken off the hourglass and immediately going into like super withdrawal.
Yeah. And he's seeing red. He's dizzy. He is obviously in pain.
I mean, Rick sees red a lot, but this was a different thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he puts it back on and you can see like he instantly is feeling better. And then we can see in the background there or in the foreground, Beth is calling and he again doesn't answer her call.
So as we go to the pit stop, where we see the other end of Beth calling and him not answering while she's simultaneously doing a goggle search with satellites for Ultra Humanite, you know, blah, blah. Sylvester's talking his stuff about legacy and all that, who died and who has kids out there. But what I want to focus on is all the new information that got dropped on us in this scene. The Atom's never really been mentioned on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first time, I believe, that the Atom, Al Pratt, is mentioned. And so he says that the Atom has a son, which would be Al Rothstein, which is Atom Smasher, who we just saw in Black Atom.
Okay.
So that's cool. And then he name drops other people that died at the last fight with the JSA. One of whom is very surprising. Mr. Terrific was there, which ties in very nicely with my headcanon about the geography of that whole scene and the JSA headquarters. We, okay. we can discuss that some other time. Dr. Fate, we figured was there, though we never see him in the fight. The Spectre.
Yeah.
The Spectre died in that fight? I don't get that. I'm just running through the roster of the ISA at that point. And I'm like, who there could have killed the Spectre?
I don't know too much about the Spectre.
He's basically omnipotent.
Okay.
It's basically like killing a god.
Okay.
I'm going to say the wizard took him out.
All right.
Because the wizard at least has magic. He maybe got lucky. And it would go a ways to explain why he was the one put in charge of the ISA when Jordan was out of town.
Yeah.
Instead of Brainwave or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
I'll go with that.
It was the wizard that was in charge when Jordan was not around. It's because that's the dude that took out the Spectre. That's my headcanon. Yeah. It is in no way official, but I do have plans, since we're not getting a season four, I have plans on pitching all my headcanons to Jeff and seeing if he'll sign off on making them official.
Oh, nice.
It would be small potatoes, you know, doesn't really affect anything since there's not more of the show, but it would at least give me the ability to answer some people's questions and say, no, this is official because Jeff signed off on it.
Is Jeff the type of creator that like already knows those answers? I know there are some people who like build this whole world and have everything concrete, and then other creators will like, okay, this is what happened, I'll fill in the rest later.
A lot of the time, these answers are known. For example, do you know what happened to the original Fiddler?
No.
Do you know if he's dead or alive?
I assume dead.
You assume dead. They never say it on the show one way or another. But yes, yes, he's dead. That was one of those questions that I had to have answered. And I was told, oh yeah, he's dead. I didn't get any more details than that. But it's impossible to like for them to know absolutely everything, especially in a world this big. But it's sort of the thing where a lot of it is known because a lot of it would have played into other plans later down the road, possibly. But some things like you just haven't had room to consider.
Yeah.
I can't really elaborate further without spoiling what the plans for season four would have been. And I don't think I'm allowed to do that.
Okay.
Or I don't think Jeff would want me to do that. But when we talk to Jeff, we'll find out what there is to find out. So yes, to answer your question, often Jeff knows those answers. Okay, so, oh yeah, that's where we were. At the pit stop, Sylvester name drops, gives us all this information that the Atom and the Spectre and Mr. Terrific died that night as well. Like that was just a chock full night of death.
Yeah.
Because in addition to the ones that, like, we explicitly saw there, or remnants of, you know, because there's the green fire to indicate Green Lantern. We had Flash's helmet there. But then also in the dialogue, they mentioned that both the Hawks died there. Dr. Fate, all these people, like, man, it's a real rough night for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. And I still think it's incredible that, like, Courtney didn't know about that and Yolanda, like, when they started out. They didn't have no idea about all these people.
I mean, Courtney had heard of them.
Yeah.
But a lot of it also is because most of the JSA's activity was from much earlier.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, keep in mind the JSA started in the 40s and broke up decades ago. And this is another thing where, like, Jeff knows stuff. And in this case, so do I. Like, almost every decades ago, I could tell you the exact year.
Oh, okay.
Because the script said the exact year.
Yeah.
So Yeah, there's a big gap between the Eclipso stuff where the JSA breaks up after killing Bruce Gordon and the JSA coming back together for presumably the first time and getting killed in 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like Courtney was 5 when they died, but she was definitely not born the last time they were active.
Okay, that makes sense. I forgot about that.
But she had still heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that does make a lot more sense than, like, just 10 years after they died, nobody had heard of them.
Yeah.
And that's why. And, you know, we know it has something to do with the time vortex.
Yeah, from the comic.
Exactly.
Right. A few more little drops in the scene where Sylvester said that he put a bug at the McKent house. And so that's how he knows that Icicle will be alone because Cameron and the grandparents will be going to a vigil for Mr. Dysinger.
How cold is it, no pun intended, for Lily to go to a vigil for a missing teacher that she murdered?
Yeah, I thought that. I also thought that it didn't make sense that Jordan wouldn't be going. Why wouldn't he want to support his son? And why wouldn't he want to look good in public? And so I already thought that was a little strange.
Jordan needs some time away from the family to work on his plans.
Oh, I think it makes sense knowing everything, but...
Oh, to them, you mean?
Right. Like, if I was Cameron, I would be a little miffed if my dad didn't go to see my favorite teacher. Or to go to a vigil for my favorite teacher.
Yeah. Well, from Cameron's perspective, I think that he knows that his dad is sort of struggling to maintain necessary cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
To paraphrase a Stephen King book. So I feel like Jordan's probably trying to limit his public appearances.
Yeah.
You know, he had his big coming out, but we haven't seen him like out in public since then, really. And yeah. He's probably putting the word out there that, like, you know, I'm recuperating after my accident, you know, still dealing with some stuff. So I think people are going to be understanding when their hero comes back from the dead.
And then we wrap up the scene with Beth telling Sylvester, like, you're talking like we're never going to see you again. And he's like, don't be silly. And then takes off. Which the first time I watched it, I was thinking, oh, this is just him being nice. He doesn't need to push them away because he'll listen to him because they see him as an authority figure. That he can just say, no, you're not coming along to this fight.
Yeah.
So he's being nice to them, which kind of made me think that this was just Sylvester trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. But being nice is a little off brand for him.
Yeah, but he always has kind of a softer spot for the kids.
Yeah. And then we catch up with the young All-Stars who are, I guess, using the ISA meeting room as their base of operations.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Mike pointing out, like, what do they just sit around staring at a big painting of themselves?
Yeah, because isn't that the exact same at the JSA headquarters?
No, they just had that photo, which was like this
big.
Oh,
I thought they had a painting of it too.
No. Okay. You know, we all thought it. I love that big painting being there. Yeah. But at the same token, like, you really have to think, like, they had to hire somebody to paint that.
Mm-hmm.
They had to pose for it. They had to get Grundy to stand still. That was not an easy thing, any of that.
No.
And just so they can put it on the wall and have a meeting in front of a giant portrait of themselves, it takes a certain amount of egotism to try to attempt what they attempted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it really plays into that very well. But surface level, it is just very silly.
It is.
And leave it to Mike to point that out. Mike really has no filter in this episode.
No, he doesn't. Jakeem is asking Cindy what's happening to her, saying, hey, we just want to help. And Cindy does have this like moment of vulnerability where she shares it and says that her father experimented on her for all her life, put metal shivs in her arms and then pumped her so full of chemicals that her hair turned white. And then who knows what else he did to her.
I went to this place that has like craft beer and sodas on tap.
Uh-huh.
And one of the cashiers had the exact Cindy white bangs thing going on. Yeah. Like, I wanted to ask her, like, did you get that from Stargirl? But I think it's just become a bit trendy now. But I think it's because of Stargirl. I never saw it before Stargirl.
Jakeem decides to make a wish. And Mike's like, whoa, you need to write it down to everything. And Jakeem's like, no, I got this. And he wishes that the Thunderbolt will take him and Mike and Cindy to the lab that has what we're looking for.
Yeah, really vague.
As they like disappear, you can see how disappointed Mike is and like, great.
Didn't even say a Dragon King lab. Like, it could have turned out worse.
Oh, yeah.
Or better.
Yeah, it was pretty bad where they ended up, but they did get some answers.
When I said worse, I meant more far afield from what he meant.
Yes, yes.
You know, like maybe they would end up at the lab where they create new toffee flavors or something. Because let's be fair, 2 out of the 3 of those would definitely be looking for that lab.
Oh, for sure. And then we get a scene with Cameron and Jordan. Cameron saying that Courtney hasn't called or texted him back. We need to prove that your intentions are good to change her mind. You know, just saying the words isn't going to do anything. And so Jordan kind of says that he thinks that maybe the Ultra Humanite was behind killing Mr. Dysinger. And what if he were to bring in the Ultra Humanite himself? Like, would that be enough to show Courtney that he's good?
Yeah. So, you know, my thought was, I don't think that he needs to blame the Ultra Humanite for Mr. Dysinger in order to like pitch this plan to Cameron. Mm-hmm. So he must know that his mom did it.
Yeah.
And he's covering for her.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, how does he know? Because the cameras were out at that point.
Well, he probably has had conversations with his parents.
No, I know, but like catching up. Oh, hey, what have you been up to? Oh, well, I just murdered this guy last week.
There was probably a scene like, we have to go to this vigil for Cameron's art teacher who I killed.
Yeah, I mean, she could just say it like that. Yeah.
I mean, when he killed the wizard back in 103, they just came out of the hallway and were like, oh, we'll clean this up. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I mean, they've always been pretty loosey-goosey with the whole murder thing.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I was thinking? This has nothing to do with Stargirl or anything else. But I was thinking about the word homicide, which means the ending of a life. So shouldn't, like, mass murder be called multicide?
I guess it could.
Or polycide? I was thinking about this. I watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy, extended editions, all of them, mm-hmm. yesterday. Mm-hmm. But when Sméagol was killing Deagle, it made me think, this is called fratricide, and there's matricide, and there's patricide. And I'm like, why isn't there a word for killing a bunch of people? And it should be multicide or polycide or something. There should be a word for it, and there isn't. But whatever it is, Icicle has committed it.
Yeah.
Brought it back. So yeah, he wants to go stop Ultra Humanite. In order to prove, hey, guys, see, I'm on the side of angels. I killed a gorilla.
Yeah, so I'm kind of wondering which side he's really playing. My gut instinct is that Jordan's still bad. And he's going to get Ultra Humanite there and then try to take out the JSA. But on the other side, he could be playing a long con. And he could be just using Ultra Humanite. And he is going to kill the Ultra Humanite in front of them to prove that he's good. And then that'll get him in on the good side. And then,
and by the Ultra Humanite, you mean the gorilla.
Yeah.
At this point, it's getting very difficult to refer to a handful of characters.
Yes, that's true. So I guess he could do that if he kills the gorilla. Well, Dragon King has already proven that he can't be killed, or at least it's very difficult. So he could come back in a different body, but it still looks, I don't know. There's so much to think about.
Yeah. It's a real like 3-card Monty of brains here.
Yeah.
So we jump over to the Sylvester's man cave, and he's all suited up, but there's no staff because Courtney took it, and he's a bit miffed at that. And I could talk about this scene for 2.5 hours.
I do not want to, because my main note here is he is being so mean.
Yeah.
And I do not like it.
He unloads on Pat, calls him the laughing stock of the entire JSA. He was the running joke. And full on blames him for his Starman's death. It's almost a relief knowing after the fact that this is the Ultra Humanite, because for that to have actually been Sylvester saying those things is rough.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, I already knew he was the Ultra Humanite even when I read the script the first time. So I never like was duped into that.
Oh, at what point did you know?
I knew pretty early on.
Okay. Because you were shocked when the Icicle came back.
That I didn't know about. Yeah.
Okay.
But I had been let in by the writers that Sylvester wasn't really Sylvester, because it was affecting some of the stuff that I was having to put in the series Bible.
Okay, that makes sense.
Though, in the end, the determination was made that anything that Sylvester, air quotes, said about his past, what had happened to him in the past, was essentially, we were just going to accept it as true, as if it came from the actual Sylvester.
Okay.
Because I guess this is the level of research that Ultra Humanite did.
Gotcha.
This next scene I can also talk about for 2.5 hours. Sylvester goes upstairs and Courtney has heard all of that. And obviously she is not down with anything that he's saying.
Nope.
She must be so mad at him right now.
Oh yeah.
But really it comes across more as disappointment. So maybe she's just disappointed.
Yeah, I think the disappointment wins out over, I think she's both.
Yeah, I think she's probably heartbroken, but she explains in no uncertain terms that whatever he may say, Pat is the hero of the story. Pat is more of a, here's what she said.
Pat Dugan is my hero.
I mean, dude, I almost cried.
Oh, I did. Both times I watched.
Look, everyone talks about like all these various ships. They got their Kamini ship. They got their Starcat ship. They got their Our Knight ship. But the most important relationship on this show, to me, is Courtney and Pat.
Absolutely.
When she says, I was heartbroken when I found out that you weren't my father, but I thank God every day that Pat is. I mean, that's the whole point of the show to me is like, he's her dad.
Yeah.
Barbara is Mike's mom.
Yeah.
There's no step. It's just, we are a real family. We've been brought together and we are as tight-knit as if we've always been this family.
Yeah. And if you go back and watch episode one, the amount of growth that they've had as a family to become this unit is huge.
Yeah.
It's all earned.
Yeah. It's really, really beautiful. It's probably one of the most satisfying emotional connection stories I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah.
Look, I said that I just watched Lord of the Rings yesterday. Courtney and Pat, as they've grown together, has been like on par with Sam and Frodo.
Okay.
Like the closestness that they achieve. Like, okay, you'll probably cut all this out because it's so far afield. But after the Eagles bring them back to Gondor. And,
oh, spoiler alert.
And Frodo wakes up and everybody comes in and is like, oh, Frodo. And then Sam comes in and Frodo's smile fades, not in a sad way, but they just exchange a look with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And don't need to say anything. Like, they have all the connection they'll ever need right there, because they've been through stuff that they could never even describe to other people, and they're bonded at a molecular level. And that's Courtney and Pat.
Can't argue with it.
So yeah, Courtney stands up for Pat real hard, and Sylvester doesn't care. He just says, I need the staff. And then he takes it.
She tries calling it back and it will not go back to her. He does seem noticeably like softer with her. Like he is not being as harsh as he was with Pat, which made me hope a little bit again before I knew he was ultra humanite, that he was, you know, trying to make amends, maybe. I don't know.
It's also worth pointing out at this point that he does legitimately forget that he's not Sylvester sometimes.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder how much of what he says and does throughout the season is getting lost in the role and how much is manipulation.
So is it entirely getting lost in the role, or is there any piece of Sylvester still left in there? Like they said that his brain was gone, but I wasn't sure if there's anything about the soul or anything.
There's no soul stuff.
Okay.
Sylvester's brain has been removed from his body, and that is just the ultra humanite.
Okay.
Because it's not a possession thing or anything. Like, there's no like...
Mm-hmm, right.
It's a physical brain removal.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just... this is why we had Dolores Winters at the top of the episode, is to remind us that this guy won an Oscar, and not only won an Oscar, but like was acting as the person who won the Oscar. So it's like two levels of acting.
Mm-hmm.
He was acting like someone acting. So that's some skill. And I love that scene at the end, to jump ahead a lot. Wow, we're not even all that far into the episode yet. But I love that he gets lost in there almost to the point like he's getting ready to like get Pat out of the hole because he's forgotten for a moment that he's just pretending.
Yeah.
So, you know, throughout the seasons, some of his affections and kindnesses may have been genuine.
Yeah.
Genuine fakery, but, you know, genuine in that, like,
right,
not a manipulation. Just getting lost in that role.
I can't wait to rewatch this whole season and just like focus on him.
Oh, yeah.
To be like, okay, where is he doing that? Yeah.
But, you know, he takes the staff and he tells her that she's not worthy. And I mean, come on. We're all watching that going, nah, I'm not buying that.
And then we have Pat and Barb and Courtney, Yolanda and Beth. They're all shocked that the staff did not return to Courtney. Pat says his plan, you know, he's going to go get Stripe. He's going to intercept Sylvester before he gets there. And they're saying that we need Rick. So Pat's like, okay, you go get Rick and him help. And he's going to go get Stripe.
And Court's just like so bummed. I mean, I wrote despondent, but I think bummed also works, right?
I think so. Rightfully so.
So moving on, the young All-Stars find themselves in a... And that's how I'm referring to Mike and Jakeem and Cindy. They're the young All-Stars now,
mm-hmm.
whether Cindy likes it or not.
Yeah.
They find themselves in one of the underground tunnels somewhere. They've got a Dragon King symbol on the wall. So like, oh, we found one of his labs. Maybe you did a good job, Jakeem.
Yeah, but the Thunderbolt is like, you were looking to impress Cindy. And so it wasn't what Cindy wanted. It was what you wanted. And that's where we are. I got real nervous.
We didn't find the cure. We found the ways to impress her. So we know what happens. So I think that in the Thunderbolt's mind, this was Jakeem's opportunity to beat up the Ultra Humanite.
Or
like, that'll impress her. You go beat up that giant gorilla, she'll be real impressed.
Or it was like he was bringing her to the person who has the answers. Because who knows better than Dragon King than to actually give her a solution if there is one.
Yeah. I'm going to go with mine, though. I like mine better.
I think that's more fun.
So as we discussed earlier, you know, Pat arrives at the pit stop to find that Sylvester has completely wrecked Stripe.
Mm-hmm.
And Zeke's like, maybe he's just doing what you did to Mike when you fought Eclipso. Obviously, we know that wasn't the case, but Pat buys into it. And gets a backup plan.
Do you think this was always Ultra Humanite's plan? Is to make Pat think that he was lying to protect him so that Pat does show up there so that he can take him out?
I don't know. That seems a little too layered. I don't think that was it.
Okay. Because it was definitely reading that way for me.
I mean, that's kind of up there with, like, the bad guy getting caught on purpose. And I hate those kinds of plot twists.
I meant to go to jail. Haha, it's my plan.
And then it's always some convoluted thing that, you know, there's too many unpredictabilities.
Like the Joker in Dark Knight?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
It's the weakest part of that whole movie.
Oh, all right.
Which is a very strong movie otherwise.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what happens in the last episode, but I definitely was thinking that he wanted to isolate Pat and get him.
I think he saw a good opportunity when Pat turned up to do that. Maybe he didn't even really want to have to take Pat out. But we don't know what the overall plan is yet.
Right, yeah.
So Pat may have just created a situation in which he had to get taken out instead of just being sidelined and being taken out emotionally. You also have to consider that at this point, Ultra Humanite Sylvester is saying he's going to go kill Icicle. But now we know that they were in cahoots all along.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what he was planning on doing. Was he going to say he killed Icicle? I don't know.
Yeah, how is he going to prove it? Since they know they can come back, was he going to like jar up some water? You're like, haha, you can't get back together now.
I got a jar of water. I killed him.
Yeah.
That I'm going to put a jar of water in amongst my prop displays and say that it's the remains of Icicle.
Perfect. All right. So going forward, we usually kind of just finish one scene when they're intercut. But I think it's kind of important to go through all the cuts because we're learning the information.
That's how I wrote them down this time.
So we start out and they're leaving to go find Rick. And they open the door and there he is. And he's saying that he needs their help.
And that's all of that scene.
And then Pat has his flamethrower at the McKent house. And he's in this stripesy outfit.
I wrote stripesy with an exclamation point.
Yep. And I just started crying because I was like, oh, but they're teaming up again.
Oh, man. This episode really, really did a number on you, huh?
Oh, my God, it did.
Meanwhile, back at the Dragon King lab,
Cindy is looking around and discovers that someone's been working at that lab. And they're like, wait, but isn't your dad dead? And she said he's supposed to be.
And, you know, I have to address the Dragon King being alive thing because, you know, comic book stuff, people come back from the dead all the time. Sylvester came back from the dead. Icicle came back from the dead, blah, 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 blah. Lest you think that Dragon King is just one person coming back from the dead too far, anyone. Him staying dead would have been terrible. Because before he actually died, they said out loud, I don't think Dragon King can even be killed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Cindy sticking a shiv through his chest seems like definitely not enough to have killed him.
No.
That's why Dragon King's alive. He's been alive all this time, and we just didn't know until now.
Yeah, I mean, I always assumed that he was still alive.
Who's to say his organs are even in the places that we expect them to be?
Yeah.
That shift could have gone through nothing.
In the first season, when he mentions a wizard and he's like, can I have the body? I fully expect that something's going to happen with that body at some point. Or at least it was planned to.
Maybe those were wizard's eyes in that jar.
Could be.
So I did love this. When Pat catches up to Sylvester, air quotes Sylvester now, and he obviously realizes he needs to change his tack and roll with this you're just trying to protect me thing that Pat has said.
Yeah.
When he says, I was brought back from the dead to fight someone else who came back from the dead. This is my destiny. I was like, that's sensible thinking, actually.
It makes complete sense.
I mean, he's looking at it from like a narrative perspective, which is kind of a weird way to look at your life. But no, it has a very nice narrative symmetry. And it addresses the fact that a lot of people are coming back from the dead right now. and like calls attention to it instead of shying away from it.
Yeah. So they kind of make up more or less. And then we go over to the lab. As Jakeem is reaching for something, Mike says, "Don't touch anything. You might catch what she has."
It's those eyeballs.
I'm just like, whoa, rude. That's
the wizard's eyeballs. And yeah, you might catch what she has. And I love that she's like, really?
Yeah, he really does have no filter at all this episode.
None at all. All that lint is getting straight through. And so here's where I really want to find out what you were thinking as you watched the episode. So they find Dragon King's body. She takes the hood off and his brain's missing. Now, you don't have a lot of time before the gorilla comes in.
Yeah.
And it's revealed. But what were you thinking at this point?
I immediately was thinking, you know, Ultrahumanite is involved. Like, okay, so Dragon King is still alive and he's in some other body. I did not think that he was in the body of the gorilla.
Nice.
Until he came in and said, "Hello, daughter." And then I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of a giveaway.
Was that Nelson Lee doing the voice acting?
Yes. Do you know? In fact, Stargirl Wiki reached out to me a few weeks ago when the Ultrahumanite first turned up, saying like, "Hey, do you know who did the voice of the Ultrahumanite? I can't find it in the episode or in the credits anywhere. I want to put it on the wiki." And I was like, "I'm sorry, I can't tell you." Because that would have been a hell of a spoiler.
Yeah, it would have been. So he was that voice all the way back then, too.
I believe so.
I guess voiceover work you do all at one time anyways. But
yeah.
Okay.
So with Dragon King in the gorilla body, the question then becomes, so where's the Ultrahumanite's brain? And we cut back to Pat and Sylvester moving through the McKent house. And we get a nice close-up of the back of Sylvester's head where we see a scar right before he knocks Pat out.
So I wonder, when I do my rewatch now to try and catch all the moments that Sylvester is not being Sylvester, I wonder if that scar has been in there all season.
I don't think so. Just for the fact that, like, I don't think you want to subject Joel to having to sit in a makeup chair for a thing that we're not supposed to see yet.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you don't want someone seeing that. It's a reveal. It's
yeah.
And it's supposed to be real subtle. So, that's why they push real close in on it. So I don't think that they put any makeup on him to put a little scar in there.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think it's a nice touch, but isn't really necessary. Because right after you hear, okay, well, then where is Ultrahumanite's brain? And then you see him take him out.
Yeah.
And then put it together. Yeah.
You got to show the scar. Otherwise, like, people wonder, like, wait a second, but he doesn't have a scar.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a little weird that Dolores's scar was like on her face almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like under her hair. But that's not where you want to put it for an actress.
No, but also, I mean, when we saw Dragon King's body there, the whole top of his head was off. So wouldn't there be a scar all the way around?
Well, that's how they did it with him. He was leaving that body behind.
Yeah. All right. So then we have Jordan there saying, all right, what now? Sylvester says, I'll take care of him. And then back to the young All-Stars. The gorilla is saying, I've missed you. And I feel like he kind of means that. But maybe not like, hey, I've missed you as my daughter. Just, hey, I've missed my, you know.
Greatest experiment.
Yeah.
Until now. Yeah, what a jerk.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, to be fair, the last time they saw each other, she stabbed him.
But he kind of created her to be a stabbing machine, so can't really get mad about that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't create a stabber and then get mad when it stabs.
Yeah. And Cindy kind of keeps her sass, saying, you know, this new look, you know, not an improvement. And then I like that she's looking out for Mike and Jakeem. You know, being like, get ready to run so that, you know, when she goes and she throws the chemicals to kind of stop him starting the fires, they can take off and get to safety.
I also want to point out that, you know, when she throws those jars, she's not guessing.
Yeah.
Remember, she's a real smart chemist. So she knows what's in those jars and she knows what's going to happen when she throws them.
Yeah.
I noticed that in my notes, I do abbreviations. So DK is Dragon King, Ultrahumanite is UH, and I referred to him in this scene as DKUH, like Dekah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
It's getting difficult, as I said, to refer to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think next episode's going to be even more confusing.
Oh, no. Okay.
I mean, just because we'll start the episode already knowing about the shell game of brains, the brain shell game.
Yeah.
So how do we refer to Sylvester? Well, Sylvester isn't there. So that's easy. If we say Sylvester, we mean the Ultra Humanite in Sylvester's body.
Yeah.
But if we say Ultra Humanite, do we mean Sylvester or do we mean the gorilla? And if we say Dragon King,
we just describe him by their meat suit.
I guess if we say Dragon King, then we mean the gorilla. Yeah. Yeah, I guess we'll refer to them as their meat suit. But I kind of don't want to call Ultra Humanite Sylvester.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. We have time.
Yeah. All right. Then we go over and check in with Yolanda helping out Rick. And they're like, maybe you just need to take this off. And he's like, no, you need me powered up. Like, I can't do that. And then starts talking about how Sylvester might know. He knew about the limiter, so maybe he can help me with whatever the issue is.
I want to focus here. The team knows there's like some heavy stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
They know that like they're down a Stargirl and Rick is finally back and willing to help. But they all of them are just more concerned with getting him healthy. And I think that's so wholesome and beautiful.
That's just the team that they are.
And yeah, so they're going to start putting stuff together about like, why is Sylvester doing this when he clearly knows about the addiction that Rex went through?
Yeah, and I love the fact that Beth has been doing this research on her own, because even though Rick is shutting her out, she has just been wanting to help him and try to figure out what's going on.
I mean, it is that, of course. But also, let's be fair, Beth does not need an excuse to research something.
It's true.
So as they're sort of putting together the susness of Sylvester's advice to Rick, we move over to a scene where he just spells out all the manipulations of the entire season. So he's got Pat in a shallow grave, and it's worth noting that Cosmo is flipping out.
Yeah.
Cosmo is not having this.
No, Cosmo knows you do not do this to Pat.
And he has to be stern and command it to shut down, but it does. And then he just starts burying Pat while he does the supervillain soliloquy.
Yeah.
Except he's not talking about his future plan. He's just pontificating about like, hey, look how great I am. Look at everything that I accomplished already. As I bury you here. The scene is so masterfully done because we get these like supervillain soliloquies all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any emotional resonance like this one does, typically.
Yeah.
Because you've got the stakes of him burying Pat alive. You have Pat realizing that his friend is not his friend at all, but one of his greatest villains. And then you have him like appealing to the character that the villain is playing almost successfully. Unless that's Ultra Humanite just toying with him.
Oh, I think it was successful. Yeah.
Wow, that was good. You almost got me. He just goes back to, and just the idea of him explaining stuff to him as he piles dirt on him. And look, despite all the heavy drama, I almost laughed pretty much every time Pat got dirt thrown right in his face.
Yeah.
Also, part of me was like, is that Joel just messing with Luke?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking like his freak out, like, wait, hold on. It reminded me so much about the old comedy movie. I guess they are old now, but from the early 2000s, the comedy movies that Luke Wilson used to do, like it just... He didn't seem like Pat. It seemed more like one of those characters with his little outburst there.
So let's review all of Sylvester's reveals. This is not in the order that he said them because I didn't write any of it down. But we already know that he had Rick take the limiter out, knowing that he would get addicted and go through all of this. He convinced Yolanda to push away Cindy, which obviously didn't take that much convincing anyway.
Yeah.
But that's because he knew that Cindy, of everybody, would be the the most likely to see through him.
Yeah.
Which is a good endorsement of Cindy's character detector. Is that a word?
Yeah.
A phrase?
Yeah. I guess there's a good chance that she met Ultra Humanite sometime in her life.
I don't think so. Because
oh, really?
She said, I think that gorilla might be one of my dad's experiments.
Okay.
So she would have known it was the Ultra Humanite right away if she'd met the Ultra Humanite before.
Yeah, that's true.
But she approaches everyone with a cynical attitude and she sees the worst in people. She says that explicitly to Courtney at the diner. She says, you see the good in people, I see the bad in people. So obviously, seeing the bad in Sylvester / Ultra Humanite was going to be down to her, if anybody.
Yeah.
And then he had Beth push her parents away in order to distract her, which also could have gotten her killed if her dad hadn't bought a burner phone.
Yeah.
That ended up working out actually pretty well for Beth. If he hadn't done that, they wouldn't have been forced to talk to Dr. McNider, and she may not have learned about combat mode and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So that one backfired on him, actually, a bit. I mean, it worked for a while, but in the end, it's a backfire.
Right, right.
Actually, that's not all that he did this season. More will be revealed.
And then with Mike, he convinced Mike to just do what Pat said he couldn't do and put him right in danger's way.
Yeah.
And then he said that he used the ape and Jordan to help him get attacked so he could play the victim there.
He also says, like, he talks about his decades spent in that gorilla body and the power of it, but that he missed the adulation of being Dolores Winters. And that's really what he's in this for, is the adulation that Starman gets.
Yeah. And he says, I know Jordan and Dr. Ida have plans, but for me, this is what it's all about.
Yeah. Which is some petty garbage. Yeah. I just want to be loved, so I'm going to murder people.
Mm-hmm.
But hey. And then he's about to give Pat the whole end game, the real supervillain soliloquy. Like, here's my master plan. But Pat doesn't respond. Because Pat has been buried alive. Tell me, Sarah, how did you feel at the end of the episode?
I am holding out every hope that I have that Pat's going to get saved.
I will just say, a reminder for everybody, they knew going into this that this might be the last season of this show.
I don't like where this is going.
It's not going anywhere. That's the finish line. That's all I had to say.
Yeah, I don't care for that. Pat's going to be fine. He's going to get rescued and then they're going to all share a nice meal together. And then somehow the Crocs are going to come back. They're all going to have a great time.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we have some reader mail. So stick around after these ads, please.
Stargirl After Show.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Stargirl After Show.
And we're back. So before we go into the whole where you can find us online, blah, blah, blah stuff, I want to address some listener mail. One is very fresh. One came before the last episode came out, but after we'd recorded our coverage for it. So it's a little dated. And then I have another one that got buried in my emails because I get a lot of emails.
Okay.
You know, I live in Georgia, so I get roughly 7,000 emails from Raphael Warnock every day.
Mm-hmm.
Plus all my work emails. Almost as many work emails.
Honey, I get a bunch from Stacey Abrams.
But you live in a different state.
I know, but I've supported her.
Good on you. So first, a letter from TJ about the Montez cycle of judgment. Hi, my name is TJ, and I just discovered this podcast at the start of season 3. Welcome to the show. I'm not sure if this is the right place to send in my thoughts, but I had an idea after Frenemies Chapter 6, going way back now, concerning Yolanda and her family. First off, I share most people's opinion that her parents are the absolute worst. Preach. But as you guys were discussing, all the shade thrown at the Montezes in this episode, I got to thinking, Yolanda's behaving just like them this season, particularly towards Cindy. Now, granted, what Cindy did to Yolanda is awful and Yolanda's anger is completely justified, but Yolanda is letting that anger blind her to any other possibilities besides Cindy's evil. She can't hear or see any evidence that could possibly point to anything else. Who does that sound like? I think the show is setting it up for someone to finally call Yolanda out for acting like her parents, and there will be a moment when her attitude flips. Just a thought I had, but I had to get it out before I lost it. Thanks for providing a great way to unpack what I see on the show every week, and I look forward to so much more. Your fan, TJ.
Yes, TJ, I completely agree. And I think Yolanda is acting much like a lot of what the media depicts Catholics doing, which is saying one thing and then acting completely the opposite.
I think also it's worth noting that we just learned that she's also been manipulated into this.
Yeah.
Not that she needed much of a nudge, but when the OG superhero is telling you that, like, your instincts are right in this case, it's not giving her a lot of incentive to back down or reevaluate what she's thinking.
True.
She's got her feelings have gotten the best validation that they could possibly get. Our next letter comes from Megan. The subject is Stargirl. So this could go anywhere.
Yeah.
Hi, Sarah and Sean. I know we have a couple of episodes left, but I just wanted to say that listening to Stargirl After Show is the highlight of my week. Thank you so much. I would hope that watching the show would be the highlight of your week. Stargirl was the first DC show I've watched from the very beginning and is by far my favorite. It will forever be the show I can watch over again. The cast and crew are amazing, and Breck is forever going to be the best superhero slash Stargirl in my eyes. This girl is saying nothing I can disagree with.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting us in on Easter eggs and behind the scenes and keeping me updated with the show. I have a couple of questions. What will happen with the store once the show ends? And what are your hopes for the final episode? Oh, I think she means our merch store when the show
ends.
Yeah,
that's what I'm assuming, yeah.
The merch store will stay up, and I will still add things to it because I have really cool products that I want to put on there that I haven't had the time to design yet, but I'm going to put them up because the love for the show isn't going to go away when the show ends. And people will still want these things, I think. So no worries about that. I can't tell you about my hopes for the final episode because I have seen it.
So my hopes, first major hope after this episode, is a happy reunion with Pat and the family. I just hope we get, I know that they filmed this knowing that this could be the end of the show. And so I just hope we get, kind of wrap ups with everything. It's kind of cheesy to want like a happily ever after and, everything just works out for them. But that's exactly what I'm hoping for, because I think that's what Stargirl is all about, is just the love and support and happiness of your fellow teammates. So, yeah, that's what I want.
And I say, so say we all. And a letter from Steven. The subject line is basically the entire content of the email itself. How do so many people know the secret identities of the heroes? And the message is, I'm looking forward to the after show at the end of the season. It seems that all the heroes and villains know the identities of each other. I have trouble recalling how all of the identities was revealed to each other. I would like to hear a discussion of how the folks at Helix knew that Alan Scott was the Green Lantern. There was an extra V in there. So we know the JSA has files on all of the ISA. So, they've been arrested and stuff. So once you're arrested, your identity pretty much becomes known. As to the heroes' identities, it's never really explained. I think that once the old JSA died, their identities weren't quite as protected, maybe.
Yeah.
It's not hard to hear that Green Lantern and all these people died, you know, because there was a funeral for them. They mentioned it. There was a funeral for the JSA. So their demise was public knowledge. And then to like put together, okay, all these other people had funerals like right around that time as well. And you look them up and, you know, it's 2010. It's not 1950. You can look up, find them online and see their faces and go like, oh, yeah, yep, that's Green Lantern. That's my thought. As to kids, they haven't really hidden their identities very much.
No, they're...
Brainwave found out who Courtney was in season one with his brain, like reading minds. Not like just, not like I figured it out. But then let everybody know. And then from there, it's just easy to connect all the dots. As to Helix learning about them, they just said, we do our research. That's what Nurse Love said. And I think that we're just meant to believe that they have some sort of network of information or some way of getting at information. And we're basically not supposed to overthink that is the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be fair. If you've seen a photo of Courtney and you've seen a photo of Stargirl, you don't think that there's any possibility of Stargirl being anyone but Courtney.
And if you see a picture of Pat and a picture of Stripesy, you're going to know who he is too.
Yeah. I really love the Shade uses Pat and Stripesy interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
As Pat uses Shade and Swift interchangeably with him.
Yeah.
As do we all. All right. That's it. Next week is the finale. Is Pat dead? Is he alive? Will we find out where Sylvester's brain is? Is Sylvester's brain? This and many more answers coming to you next week on Stargirl After Show. Until then, you can find Sarah at these places online. Go.
Go to fandomlim.com and you can find my other two podcasts, What's New Nancy Drew and The Swift Review, along with a ton of other awesome podcasts. Like Sean's Table Reads and
Gsh. That's the name of the podcast. It's called Gsh. And I'm not even going to explain it. You just have to go check it out. Also, as the letter from Megan mentioned, we do have a merchandise store at stargirlaftershow.com/shop. Go there and, you know, shop. I would say rate and review the podcast, but at this point, I don't think that's going to make much of a difference in anything.
Yeah, it would make us feel good if you leave a high review. No need to go and leave a one star.
I don't think anyone would, because we're obviously just wonderful. So yeah, that's it. Come back next week for our finale coverage. And then the week after that, I hope, if we can manage some scheduling and stuff, our post-Stargirl full series breakdown. Well, not breakdown, just our goodbye show. We'll just call it our goodbye show.
All right.
Oh man, I'm getting sad about it already. Until then, have a super great day.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.